This is a 720 to go podcast from Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
This podcast is sponsored by ADM.
As one of the world's largest agricultural processors, ADM is uniquely positioned to serve the world's growing needs for abundant food and renewable energy. ADM.
When it comes to the business of America's farmland, you need the information from the people who know it best. That's why we bring you AgriCast with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong.
Thank you very much, Roger, and good morning and welcome to the Saturday Morning Show. Checking in from our studio in Huntley, Illinois, where right now it's 35 degrees. And a lot going on today besides basketball and other activity that you've been hearing about overnight, because today we're entering the last full day of winter for 2016. Spring will arrive by tomorrow officially, and so we'll say goodbye to winter today. And, of course, the two events that we've been talking about, the one in Sublette, Illinois, because this is the weekend, I think the 34th year that the village of Sublette, Illinois, a little over 400 people, will see its population swell to thousands for the annual Farm Toy Show in Sublette. That's today and tomorrow, and it's going to be quite an event because they have 9 buildings containing farm toys from all over the country. And in addition to that, on the streets of Sublette, Illinois, on Max Armstrong Avenue and Orion Samuelson Street, they'll be lined with antique tractors, full size, not toys. And the one thing I want to mention at the top of the show is the fact that Max Armstrong will be at the event at the dinner tonight at the church starting at 5 o'clock, and then tomorrow morning at the fire department breakfast starting at 7:30. Max will be at both events with copies of his book, Stories from the Heartland, and he'll be signing those books. So if you'd like to get a Max Armstrong book from the guy who wrote it and have it signed by the guy who wrote it, be out at Sublette for the dinner tonight and the breakfast tomorrow morning. And then, of course, the other event that's been going on since the 80s, sponsored by the Chicago Farmers, the Chicago Farmers Farmland Forum 2015, starting at 8 o'clock this morning, continuing until 2 this afternoon. That is at the Weitendorf Agricultural Education Center in Joliet on Laraway Road. It's part of the Joliet Junior College, but it's not on the college campus. So those are two events that are going on today besides basketball and all of the other activity that's going on. We spent 3 days this week in Washington, D.C. at the National Agriculture Day, and we'll talk about that. We'll talk about the formation of Farm Illinois. Lee Strom is going to join us. He's executive director of Farm Illinois, and he'll be with us. And then, of course, we talk markets as well this morning. Dale Dirkholz of AgriVisor will sit down with Max to talk markets. So a lot happening here on the Saturday Morning Show, where it's 11 and a half minutes after 5 o'clock. And when we come back, we'll hear from an assistant secretary of agriculture when we continue on the Saturday Morning Show. A day of events on National Agriculture Day in Washington, D.C. on Tuesday, and the climax, the Tuesday night Salute to Agriculture banquet in the patio of the headquarters building of the U.S. Department of Agriculture. My honor to serve as MC once again, and that included introducing the Assistant Secretary of Agriculture, Michael Skews. He's Assistant Secretary for Farm and the Foreign Agricultural Service. And he welcomed everyone to the Department of Agriculture headquarters before the dinner was served, and he talked to me about the meaning of National Agriculture Day.
Well, I think the most important thing about today is the ability to communicate to our consumers about the importance of agriculture, the role that it plays in their lives. You know, less than 1% of our population today are farmers. So we're feeding the other 99%. who are far removed from the farm. So today's a day to tell our story about what we do, what we go through, and the important role that agriculture plays in their lives and in the overall economy of this country.
And on this National Agriculture Day, we're asking for some understanding on biotechnology. Does the department have a stand on GMO labeling?
Most definitely. Look, we believe that our consumers do have a right to know, and it's all about the way that that is presented. We believe that there's a way that we can inform our consumers through the label, either through a 1-800 number or using the technology that exists today with a smartphone to read a label so that they can see what's actually in their products. The biotechnology products, as you well know, have been around now for over 20 years. The science is safe science. All the studies have shown that biotechnology products are safe. It allows us to improve the overall environment. It allows us to help feed the world. And ultimately, biotechnology products are going to allow us to improve human health. So that's the message that we really need to get out there, is how important these products are for all of those reasons.
Are you as puzzled as I am about the war on science that seems to be taking place right now?
Very much so. And I don't understand why we're having the discussions that we're having. You know, the science is there. It's sound. Research has proven that these products are safe. We've asked other countries to base their decisions on trade based on sound science. We should be doing the same thing. The science says these products are safe. And again, not only are they safe, but these products are allowing us to use less herbicides, less pesticides, less water, ways that we can improve our environment. They're allowing us to develop products such as hyaluronic oil that's going to improve the human health. The golden rice, which will allow us also to improve not only human health, but help the eyesight in hundreds of thousands of children. So, you know, there's a lot of reasons to embrace the science and look at the good that the science can do. Not only that, but the world population is growing, Orion. You know, 9.7 billion people by 2050. We're going to need to use the science to feed that growing world's population.
Michael Skews, the Assistant Secretary of Agriculture for Farm and Foreign Agricultural Service, sharing some of his comments at the annual banquet to salute America's farmers and ranchers and their families on National Agriculture Day in Washington, D.C. What's happening with Farm Illinois? We'll find out when we continue on the Saturday Morning Show. Several months ago, we started talking about Farm Illinois, and we're talking about it again today because of an event that's going to take place later in March. Lee Strom is Executive Director of Farm Illinois, and he joins me now, first of all, to once again explain Farm Illinois.
Orion, Farm Illinois, and in this case, think of FARM as simply an acronym, Food and Agriculture Roadmap. Coming out of discussions that happened many years ago with the Vision for Illinois Agricultural Project that the Illinois Agriculture and the Illinois Farm Bureau started in the fall of 2013 at a meeting in Chicago, the last meeting of the Vision for Illinois Agriculture, group of leaders, including Chicago leaders, came together with agricultural interests and began a discussion about developing a more comprehensive strategic plan for Illinois' food and agricultural sectors. And out of that grew Farm Illinois, Food and Agricultural Roadmap. In the fall of 2014, a group of 50 statewide leaders all across Illinois in the food and agricultural sector began the process of developing a roadmap, a strategic plan looking at the needs of our food and agricultural sector for the foreseeable future.
And now what's going to happen later this month?
On March 31st, we will be launching the new permanent Farm Illinois body, a council, so to speak. Prior to this point, and as I mentioned back in September of 2014, that process that went through those next 9 months and concluded in May of last year, 2015, with the release of the 90-page report, which included 23 recommendations in six areas that we need to improve in the state of Illinois. The plan deals with education, with business development, entrepreneurship, resource management, transportation. All those pieces are important elements in our state's food and agricultural sector. The plan brought together the world-class assets of the city of Chicago and this region around Chicago with the world-class assets of our agricultural sector. We have a world-class ag sector here in Illinois, second to none. Brought them together for the first time, building this strategic plan. In the course of the remaining part of last year, I took that plan around the state and discussed it with communities up and down Illinois from border to border, presenting its findings, built additional support for the plan. In October last fall, we reconvened that initial leadership body in Chicago, and the decision was made to move forward then with implementation, form a new body that will work on the implementation of this going forward.
So if I'm a farmer or in agribusiness in Illinois, why should I be excited about this?
Because, as I mentioned, for the first time, you now have sitting at the table leadership from our Illinois agricultural sector. For instance, Rich Giebert, president of the Illinois Farm Bureau, has been involved with this from the beginning. Sitting at the table with a Teresa Mintel, president of the Chicagoland Chamber of Commerce, and a whole host of others thinking strategically, planning for the future of Illinois to be the global center or hub for food and agricultural innovation. As we all know, Orion, the world population is growing, estimated to be 9.7 billion people by the year 2050. There will be many challenges that will need to be faced and overcome to make sure we can feed that growing population. A collaboration of Illinois' entire food and ag sector and leadership out of the city of Chicago can significantly work to position Illinois going forward. As I mentioned, Rich Giebert and Teresa Mintel will be our ongoing vice chairs of the new permanent body. The chairman of this group will be Dr. Bob Easter. Bob is now president emeritus, having stepped down from his position of president of the University of Illinois last May. He was the original body chair of this, and he has graciously agreed to stay on. So under their leadership, those three individuals, this new group of approximately 45 to 50 statewide leaders in food and agriculture will work toward the implementation of the recommendations of this plan.
So will there be a program, an event taking place on March 31st to make this happen?
Our March 31st meeting is going to be our first meeting of this new body, and we will be meeting in Chicago at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. They have graciously offered their facility for our use. This meeting is basically going to be the final step in the organization of that, our approval of our articles of association of this new body. And then we will also, in the afternoon, have presentations provided to us by some early projects that Farm Illinois is going to consider to be a participant in, a supporter of. We see the Farm Illinois, we talk now in terms of our four C's. The Farm Illinois body will be the convener, the connector, the catalyst, and the champion for our food and agricultural space here in Illinois. So this meeting actually is closed to the public, the general public, but we do are in the stages of planning our first annual conference, which we are planning to hold in Chicago this September. And that we will be opening up and looking for interested parties in the food and agriculture space and inviting them to attend to that meeting.
Well, we wish you well, because with the transportation, the trading, and the manufacturing added to the agricultural community, this is the place to do it all. So we wish you well, and we'll follow you after your March 31st event. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We look forward. This is an exciting chapter for Illinois.
Lee Strom, the Executive Director of Farm Illinois, here on the Saturday Morning Show. We're at 27 and a half minutes after 5 o'clock. Temperature about 34, 35 degrees here in the Chicagoland area on the last full day of winter, because by tomorrow, spring 2016 will arrive. Also, keep in mind, in the week ahead, it's a four-day trading week because markets will be closed in observance of Good Friday, next Friday. And that will bring a change in the release time for one of the very important USDA reports that come out at the end of March. The Department of Agriculture will release its quarterly hogs and pigs report next Friday, March 25th, at 11 a.m. Chicago time, rather than at 2 p.m., which would be the normal time to release this kind of a report. But the noon release time is normal practice on a Friday before a holiday weekend. So Chicago Mercantile Exchange livestock markets will be closed for that day in observance of the Good Friday holiday. So keep in mind, the quarterly pig crop report will be released at 11 a.m. Friday, March 25. Yesterday, the department released the cattle on feed report, and it came in with a bigger surprise, I think, than expected. They were looking for a big increase in the number of cattle placed on feed into feedlots in the month of February, and the average guesstimate was 8.5% more. Well, the number of cattle placed on feed in February in the United States up 10%. From the same month a year ago. And as we saw yesterday, the cattle traders at the Mercantile Exchange apparently were anticipating that increase, and as a result, we saw a sell-off in the cattle futures market yesterday at the Mercantile Exchange. So as we approach the halfway mark on the Saturday morning show, still to come, my thoughts on an event in Washington this week affecting agriculture a great deal. We'll talk about that on Samuelson Says, and Max Armstrong will talk markets with Dale Durkles of AgriVisor as we come into planting season across the country. Roger, I hope you'll enjoy the last day of winter for this year.
I'm going to stay outside and enjoy every last bit of sun I can get.
Well, enjoy. I'll be heading for Arizona later today, so I'm looking forward to the sun in the desert.
That'll be wonderful.
As we continue with the Saturday morning show, Max Armstrong will be joining us to talk markets with Dale Durkles. But right now, welcome to Samuelson Says. I'm Orion Samuelson. This week, concerned about the Senate vote against biotechnology. We're brought to you by Wink Products Company, makers of quality specialty cleaning products since 1947. Before we talk about the subject, let's talk about one of your favorite items in the kitchen. That's your glass ceramic cooktop. Well, you like it except when it's time to clean it. But now I can tell you about one product that will leave your cooktop sparkling clean, and that product is Wink Glass Ceramic Cooktop Cleaner. It's strong enough to remove the greasy, grungy spots, and yet it's gentle enough for smooth top ranges. It cleans, it polishes, and it conditions smooth top ranges. And special conditioners leave a protective coating, which helps prevent scratches. Again, the product Wink Cooktop Cleaner. You can learn more about all the Wink products at wink.com. WHINK.com. Besides National Agriculture Day in Washington, D.C. this week, the Senate voted on, well, if you support the bill, it's known as the Biotech Labeling Solutions Act. If you're opposed to the bill, it's known as the Deny Americans the Right to Know, the acronym DARC Act. And it came to a vote on the Senate floor on Wednesday of this week, and it failed. It's a voluntary GMO labeling bill that would give food companies the opportunity to label or not to label. But would you believe, over the last couple of years, major food, farm, and biotech companies have spent more than $100 million fighting labeling efforts? That's according to the Environmental Working Group, and both sides spending a lot of money. And now, where do we go? Chairman of the Senate Ag Committee, Pat Roberts, worked with the ranking Democrat, Debbie Stabenow of Michigan, to come up with, as they told us Tuesday at National Agriculture Day, the Food Labeling Act that would be voluntary. It needed 60 votes on Wednesday on the Senate floor. It got only 49, and so it failed. Reaction from farm groups and from a lot of food groups was instant. Chip Bowling, president of the National Corn Growers Association, said, "Corn growers in the U.S. are disappointed that despite the clear demonstration of support from nearly 800 groups, the Senate failed to move this reasonable legislation forward. This legislation would have provided consumers with a greater amount of information in a consistent, clear manner." And the president of the American Farm Bureau, Zippy Duval, sounded really angry. And this is his quote: "It is inexcusable that today's Senate vote on a voluntary federal GMO labeling bill that preempts a damaging patchwork of state measures fell short. To say we are angry with those senators who abandoned farmers and ranchers and turned their backs on rural America on the vote is an understatement. Their vote supporting this measure ignored science, threw our nation's food system into disarray, and undermined the public's understanding of the many benefits of biotechnology in feeding a growing and hungry population." That was the reaction. And as I've been saying all along, if you don't want GMO in your food, go to the organic food store. They have all kinds of food products without GMOs. And make the labeling national and voluntary. Economics will decide whether or not the labeling will continue, because food companies will be quick to realize that if customers are not buying their food that's not labeled and does contain GMOs, as so many of our foods do, that they can really have the opportunity to get their food where the stores actually handle it. And the economics will decide, because it won't take food companies long to determine if people aren't buying their product, then they too will label, but make it voluntary. My thoughts on Samuelson Says, a presentation of the Tribune Radio Network. And at 18 minutes before 6 o'clock here on this last day of winter, we'll check in with Max when we continue on the Saturday Morning Show.
Dale Durkles, AgriVisor. Welcome back, Sage.
Hey, it's always good to be up in town.
Well, as we're getting ready for the planting season, we're getting this barrage of intentions numbers. All of the private estimates are coming out ahead of the USDA numbers that will be released on the 31st. And we'll have all these digested in a day or two, won't we?
Yeah, we probably will. You know, it's interesting. The few that I've seen so far have been really pretty close to what the USDA had projected at their outlook for them. And frankly, if we got numbers something like that, that really fits the whole acreage matrix, in my opinion, anyway.
Do we tend to get surprises in the March intentions report, or is that pretty much a nailed down number when it's released?
No, it's not a nailed-down number. It's really kind of wide open, because at this point we're really kind of all second-guessing about what producers really are going to do this year, what kind of intentions and plans. And, you know, we don't have the broad-based surveys from some of these privates like the USDA will go out and do. So there will be some surprises within the numbers, I think.
Once that report comes out on the 31st, we really get to looking closely at weather, don't we? I mean, isn't that sort of the date by which we really get engaged in watching planting season weather?
You know, I think already we're starting to get engaged in weather at this point in time because of the weather we're having right now, which is unusually warm. I'd noticed in Illinois, we've already got some low 50 soil temps right now. So, you know, weather's already becoming a part of the mix. And then on top of that, we've got this ongoing debate. How fast does the El Nino fade and how fast does La Nina come, which has got everybody really kind of on the edge of their seat this year?
We have seen some grain go in the ground already. I think about 7 to 10 days ago, there was some corn being planted at Pike County, Illinois. I saw a report of some soybeans in the southern part of the state. Yeah, soybeans. There was a plot that went in.
There was also a cornfield south of Springfield, Illinois, that went in the ground, I noticed this week as well. So we've got a few things going on. I think these are some of these big mega farmers that really are under the gun to get things in the ground. Most of your mainstream farmers, I think, are going to be sitting here waiting for that early plant date on their crop insurance before they really start to roll stuff into the ground.
The big mega farmers really under the gun, I believe was the line you used. They really are under the gun, aren't they? I mean, we're hearing a lot of reports about some of these very high cash rental rates they paid and the angst that they're going through now.
Yeah. You know, and when you go back and you look at where we're at, non-land costs on corn in the state of Illinois versus what your crop insurance guarantee is, even at an 85%, we're not really doing much more than covering my cost of putting a crop in and taking it out. So there's a lot of things that are in this mix financially that's really going to determine a lot of what we see on the planting report and also the one we get in June.
Does that then also suggest that we're not going to see much of an acreage shift taking place, even if the market were to respond a little bit, that we're pretty well set on, and the minds of the producers, they're pretty well set on what they're going to put in this spring.
You know, I think right now the producer's got his plans set, and he's going to follow through on those plans unless something huge happens, and I don't see that in the mix necessarily. You know, weather and planting conditions and the timeliness of planting will be the big thing that'll cause any acreage shift. So for the individual, what he's got in the plans right now is probably where he's going to go.
We've had a reminder in recent days that, yes, this market does respond to gyrations in the dollar. If the dollar eases back a little bit, the grain market certainly notes that.
You know, I think there's another bigger issue going on. If you look back at some of the broad commodity indices, and then if you look at crude oil, there's really a good argument to be made right now that the lows we put in commodity indices, the lows we put in crude oil to back in January, probably are going to stand up as three-year lows because we have a low every 3 years in that. So that really kind of paints a picture forward here that, you know, something probably is going to break to give us some higher prices along the way. The dollar is probably a part of that at this point, too, and especially with the Fed not going to move on interest rates right away.
They signaled this week that, in fact, they're going to pretty well slow down this process of raising rates.
It is, and it's because of economic things happening here in the U.S., and they also have to be kind of careful about how that fits the competitiveness of the dollar worldwide, because they really don't want the dollar to go up. They'd prefer the dollar to go down because that'll tend to spark inflation here in the U.S., and that's really what they're trying to get rolling.
And that whole commodity mix, we've noted that gold has actually come to life a bit there. That, again, fits the profile of what you're talking about, commodity recovery.
Yeah, it really does. And even if you look at some of the specific commodities that your listeners are interested in, corn and soybeans and wheat, you know, there's real arguments to be made there that we're passing some pretty crucial lows at this particular point in time. And so looking ahead the next few months, I think there's going to be some higher prices. And I think that 350 corn, 450 wheat, 850 bean base that we've had here over the last few months is probably going to hold up.
As they are busy planting, these growers need to be very astute marketers at the same time and watch for any activity.
Yeah, they really do. You have to keep on top of it, and you always have to be planning and looking ahead. But the one thing I've kind of counseled producers here all winter long is patience. Don't get too nervous. Don't get anxious. You could see these cyclic lows that we're starting to set up and line up. And so it suggests we're going to have some better opportunities. We're not going back to $6, $7, $8 corn. Don't get me wrong. But I think we're going to see higher prices than what's prevailing now.
And that weather scenario that you talked about could create some interest, especially as we get on into those critical days of summer.
Oh, yeah. You know, and that's going to be the big thing. It's going to really tie into how much to the upside can we really get prices to move here as we go across the next number of months. And you know, it's a who knows at this particular point. But when I look at some of the technical attributes in the markets, I can build a case easily from the technical side of it. We're going to see a 450 corn or maybe something close to a $10 bean.
There are those reality checks now and then, like the talk of importing Argentine wheat into the southeast United States. The economics, I guess, suggest that it could work, huh?
Well, a lot of that has to do with the fact that we're talking about importing feed wheat. That's what's coming in. And if you look at where our corn crop was last year, we were shorter in the eastern part of the Corn Belt. So to get corn clear down to the southeast, I got to pull out of the western Corn Belt. And it's really this transportation cost that really is creating that opportunity down there.
They didn't have very good feed grain crop in that part of the world either, did they?
No, they didn't. You know, and so and they tend to be feed deficit as it is because of the pork and the poultry that are raised down in the south and the southeast. And it's a whole lot easier, a whole lot cheaper to load a boat in Argentina and bring it up water and load it in Wilmington than to try to rail from Iowa, especially down through the Smoky Mountains and get it down into North Carolina. And for a lot of people who aren't familiar, we think about railroads straight shot down to New Orleans. Going into the southeast is not so easy.
Now, routinely, there is feed grain movement from the eastern Corn Belt down into that area. Quite often, you'll see a lot of corn moving from the area of Ohio and southern Indiana down into the chicken and hog country. But as you point out, that was a deficit area from 2015.
Yeah, it was. You know, and normally we do ship a lot of corn out of, let's say, eastern Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, as you mentioned, and we tend to push it down into the southeast in a lot of 3 and 10 and 20 car units. But as we're sitting here at this point in time where you have to pull it so far, and we don't have the corn in the eastern part of the Corn Belt to move down there because some of it's gone to export because of the river competition, some of it stays for ethanol, you know. So we just don't have the supply that we normally do.
You mentioned the fact that there's no reason to get extremely bullish about the grain market, that we're not going to see those dramatically higher prices. Is there anything out there that looms as a big negative that could really temper the enthusiasm, you know, that we might have coming along this spring?
Good weather and big crops. No doubt about it. You know, I mean, when we're sitting here going into the mix with a 2 billion or close to a 2 billion corn carry-in, when we're going to be going into the new crop bean construction with a carry-in that's going to be give or take 450 million, close to a billion of wheat. You know, if we have another good crop on top of these, it creates a real weight that the market's going to have to carry. So it does say everything is not all rosy necessarily. And on the flip side, if we're going to get those higher prices, it's probably because of weather. So you've got to plan for that contingency too.
Always good to talk to you, Dale. Thanks for coming in to darken the door of our studio. You brighten the day when you darken our door. How's that?
Hey, that works for me.
Dale Durkles, AgriVisor.
We are 2.5 minutes away from the 6 o'clock news here on WGN Radio on this last day of winter for this season, at least. And among all of the events going on today, again, a reminder, at Sublette, Illinois, it's the 34th Farm Toy Show. Don Dingus, the now retired banker, still running that program, started 34 years ago with one building of farm toys. Today, it has grown to 9 buildings with farm toys, plus the streets of Sublette. There are 450 people, about that number, in that village. And those streets will be lined with antique tractors. So today and tomorrow, and Max Armstrong will be there at the dinner this evening at 5, and again tomorrow morning at the fire department breakfast at 7:30. He'll be there to sign his book, Stories from the Heartland. So stop by and say hello to Max. And some of you, before you head for Sublette, Illinois, may want to spend part of this day at the Weitendorf Agricultural Educational Center on Laraway Road at Joliet for the Chicago Farmers Farmland Forum 2015. You can do walk-in registration, and if you didn't get the advance registration, it'll cost you $25 more, but it includes lunch, and it includes topics like, we're still doing 1031 like-kind exchanges. You'll learn about Illinois farmland values and lease trends, drones, and what's the latest on that technology for agriculture, and a lot more on the program at the Chicago Farmers. It goes from 8 this morning till 2:30. Then you can get in the car and head for Sublette, Illinois, and enjoy the Farm Toy Show. That's our time here on the Saturday Morning Show. Just a reminder that we are approaching a 4-day trading week. Markets will be closed in observance of Good Friday. on March 25th, so 4 trading days this week. And then we get the big agricultural reports. The quarterly pig crop report will come out on Friday. And then the last day of the month, quarterly grain stocks report and the big planting intentions report. Along with Max Armstrong, I'm Orion Samuelson. Thank you for joining us on the Saturday Morning Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago, WGNRadio.com.
Orion Samuelson keeps you connected to the world of business and agriculture on WGN. Hear his reports weekday mornings on The Steve Cochran Show and during the noon hour on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Plus, catch Orion and Max on Saturday mornings at 5 a.m. only on Chicago's WGN Radio 720.